Greetings. I goofed yesterday. The voicemail last night didn't happen, which is rather unusual. But it ended up getting late, and the night before I didn't sleep well, so I figured I was groggy. I wasn't thinking clearly. I would skip it and do what I'm doing now, do it on Saturday, because my family doesn't listen to this. People outside the family do, but my family doesn't. So, but I wanted to share a few things to you, hopefully to encourage, and which is one of the things I want to mention to you. But first thing, I have to take a little bit of joy in this, because you know I started my goal of 1 million jumping jacks over 5 years. At the rate I'm going, it'll be 3. I find there's a joy in these things that do not make you better or worse, give you value or anything of that nature, but it's kind of like you set a goal, and when you see that you're reaching that goal, there's that encouragement. And I'm grateful for that. And obviously, I do see the benefits. Again, the thing that I find most notable is once I got to the point of doing the 512 jumping jacks continuous, basically first thing in the morning, I find that my days, virtually always now, I'm alert and awake throughout the day. And I do think that was the tipping point. And so that's why I highly recommend it. You know, I enjoy the walks and so forth, but obviously during this time of year, I can't as much because, well, one, it's rainy, but also it's cold. And I do wonder if, you know, because when I did walk, it was only 4 miles yesterday, 4 or 5, but I did that yesterday, and I noticed that little issues with, for example, with my hip or whatnot, seem to happen, and I think it happens more in the winter than summer. I'm guessing that's true. I'm not sure, but I guess I'll find out as the weather warms if the rate seems to go down. But it is my habit when those kind of things happen, is to press through, because typically it goes away. It seems that the body warms up. And the problems go away. But so in order to reach my goal, I had to do, about 560 a day. So that first month, I did 16,000 for the month, and 17, 18, 20, 21, 16, 16, 19, 20, 21. So November was tied June at 21,248. I was definitely at that rate, but in November is when I switched to doing the 512 in the morning. And by the time December came around, I was doing 1,024 every day. So, my peak in November, 21,000, December, I upped it 12,000. So I did 33,000 jumping jacks last month. And, you know, it's kind of like, so what? You know, really, so what? It doesn't, you know, I don't get a gold star. It doesn't mean anything like that. But it's kind of like, somebody sets a personal goal, and as they see it coming into play, there's a joy in that. And because I know a lot of people, they have no purpose. They have no goals. I heard a study a while back. The people who live into their hundreds and whatnot have a drive, a purpose, a goal every day. And so I really think, because that's one of the things I noticed, I knew young where my passion was and what I wanted to pursue. So many of my peers didn't. And I do think that's one of the things that really is the Lord's blessing to me. Of course, in order to start today, I couldn't start with 512. I did do 1,024. I didn't do the 2,048 that I did a couple weeks ago, but anyway. But it's not the jumping jacks. It's not the gold star, whatnot. but it's having that goal. And, you know, when I've talked with people, again, some people, including some older people, they have no purpose. They have no goal. Nothing. There's no drive in life. And, you know, if your drive in life is because you have a piece of art, you have a place you want to go, you have something you want to build, something you want to learn. I think when I interact with people like that, they're radically different people than the people without purpose. Of course, obviously our fundamental purpose should be to seek to know Christ. But I do think having that goal, and again, the goal doesn't make you a better person, but it brings a purpose in life, a fullness to life. Again, you know, I have on my wall this image this drawing from John Painter, and it's superb work, and clearly, it was a person of a passion to do that. You know, anyway. And also, you know, for example, there's the girl who sent me this t-shirt, you know, my favorite writer calls me dad. She spent years working on that book of hers, which is on the shelf there. Anyway, I have it. But I just wanted to celebrate that. You know, I mentioned Thursday that I was talking about Daniel Hale, Brandon Bryant, and the opposite of cowards, mostly in the institutional church. Anyway, the point was that when I look at those two gentlemen, and I think this is important, needs to sink in. These two gentlemen are flawed men. They've done a whole lot of stupid things. And their heart's not pure. They're defective. And I'm just like them. But in both cases, rationale may be different. And in my case too, there was, okay, this is wrong. I need to expose it. And they did. And in the case of Brandon Bryant, it appears that it crushed him internally. Because he is the one who put the gun in his head to blow his head off and didn't. But he got close. I mean, when you have the loaded gun in your mouth, you're close. Daniel Hale, I don't know if he ever did that, but he's in prison today. And I mentioned the fact that in August, I did my video, All Hail the Whistleblower, and read his letter to the judge. I have found at least three videos online doing the exact same thing. So I wasn't unique in that. There are two others. One apparently was done in October, long afterwards, and gave some updated information. Because apparently in October, he was moved from the regular prison population into a SAMS, the Special Administrative Measures Facility. In other words, Daniel Hale is being tortured by the U.S. government. And I find that most distressing. Because, was it December or was it November? I think it was December. The Pentagon came out and said, after the, you know, because this was early August, I did my video. Late August, the U.S. government did the drone strike allegedly against two ISIS members, ISIS-K, ISIS Core Zone, and which we don't hear about anymore for some reason. But they say, yes, we killed two people. Rah, rah, we took out ISIS. Then we find out, no, actually, we killed no one from ISIS. We killed three adults and seven children. One of them was a U.S.-affiliated aid worker. So, you know, yay, we blew it. badly. And there's some investigations. It was clear it was a mistake on the part of the U.S. But more than a mistake, it was murder. So what happens to those involved? The Pentagon said there will be no punishment, no reprimands, nothing. Because it was just simply a failure of the system. However, the person who exposed that most of the tragedies that happened in the drone program, most of the targets, most of the victims, are civilians and children, is being tortured in prison. Do you see a logical consistency here? Or do you see hate? It is hate. Daniel Hale and Brandon Bryant are flawed men. But to go public is not an act of a coward. It is an act of courage. And to pay the price, especially what Daniel Hale is paying, it's worthy of honor. It's worthy of respect. It brought up to mind, because you can find a number of people. I've seen another people talk about this, and obviously because it's such a great story, it can be embellished. But apparently it is the reality. Post the time of Christ and the resurrection, a whole lot of people said, yes, Jesus is my Lord. But Rome was still the authority. So Rome said, when you're challenged, you have to say, Caesar Curios, Caesar is Lord. And if you don't, you will be crucified. You will be put to death. And I don't know the numbers, but apparently it's a large number of people who said, no, Jesus is my Lord. I will not say Caesar Curios. And it cost them their lives. Again, there are probably a lot of people who will tell you about this and embellish it because they're a storyteller. But now there's the story. And then there's living that as a model. Because, again, I will contend, what happened was Constantine had allegedly had a vision and said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to accept Christ, Christianity, and make it legal. Instead of persecuting Christians, we're going to institutionalize it, which in turn became the Roman Catholic Church. So you couldn't defeat the Christian community. So you took over the Christian community. You institutionalized it. And now you had to yield, people had to yield to the institution. And you marketed the idea that if you became part of the institution, you were a follower of Christ. A technical term there would be baloney. It's absolute garbage. It's not being part of the institution. It's being a follower of Christ. Because again, all you have to do is look at the Bible. The Old Testament, became institutionalized, not because God commanded it. You won't see that God commanded it. You will see the particular things during the time of the Tent of Meeting and so forth. But post that, it was basically institutionalized, and especially by the time of Christ, in the time of the Gospels, what you will see is the religious leadership. And note again, please, sometimes you'll see the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the scribes. Sadducees, Pharisees talking about particular sects, the scribes talking about those who would, essentially do the paperwork. But there was a religious leadership, the Sanhedrin, but there wasn't a call for that. And of course, they formed the traditions of men, which a couple hundred years later was written down, and we know it today as the Talmud. So when Christ, like I think it's Mark 7, talks about you take the commandments of God and make them commandments of man, traditions of man, and make them as commandments of God. That wasn't complimentary. That was, you're blowing it here. And he was talking about what was verbal then and became written with the Talmud, or with the Westminster Confession of Faith, or with the London Baptist Confession, or with the Council of Trent documents and whatnot. It's the exact same thing. It's just Christianized, but it's the same thing. But what was important about the Kaiser Kurios thing is I did my video in 2020 titled Kaiser Kurios, Caesar's Lord, Sieg Heil, or Hail Victory, and Social Distancing. That was the full title, a long title. And YouTube, it went on YouTube, Brighteon, and BitChute. I don't prepare myself well for this, do I? But if I go to YouTube took it down as hate speech. So I am officially warned on YouTube as hate speech. It was taken down just roughly an hour after it was put on. And on BitChute, I have 458 views. So I would suggest it wasn't an act of hate. It's an act of love. It's an act of courage. And, because I did a follow-up on it, too. Notably because of a couple of things. One is because when I talk about, and I used to say the Third Reich, but I'm in the habit now of saying the previous Reich, because that's the reality. We're living in the Fourth Reich, which is global. Another issue. Because there's a closeness to that in me because of the fact, again, my mom grew up in Germany, born in 1920, and grew up and serve the National Socialist German Workers' Party, and ended up post the war marrying an American soldier. But that video, which was only just shy of 8 minutes long, I show this picture. Do I have it on the wall? No, I don't have the wall. Oh, well, anyway, I show this picture, that common picture of the crowd saluting the ship going by just after a speech by Hitler, and the actual person who gave the speech was it Hess or Goering? Anyway, one of the other big names gave the speech. The ship goes by, and you have this crowd giving the Bellamy salute. We call it the Nazi salute, but it was originally called the Bellamy salute because it was developed in the U.S. One guy has his arms folded, and then I ask the question, is that you? Because I claim that was me. The point of that was, it's so easy to be part of the crowd, part of the people who are saying, Hail Victory, or the analogy I continue to use is those who say, Oh, to protect grandmama, I wear the mask. And I will contend wearing the mask is simply the same thing as wearing the armband 100 years ago. It's identical. It's not close. It's identical. Because there's no evidence for it. It is showing allegiance. And I pose the question, and I'll pose it again. Think of what it would have been like to be 1930s, 1940s Germany and say, okay, I am convinced my allegiance to my government, to the Third Reich, is wrong. My allegiance is to Christ. I will no longer say Kaiser Kurios, I will say, Jesus is Lord. And I'll take that armband that I've been wearing and take it off. What would it cost you? Would you be like the first, second, third century Christians? Would it cost you your life? And are you willing to say, yes, if it costs me my life, my allegiance is not the state. My allegiance is my Lord, and my Lord is Jesus Christ. Would you be willing? Consider, because that question was posed by Denis Rancourt that I've mentioned more than once, and I posed the question in the same way, but using the Third Reich example, the previous Reich example. Would you be willing to say, okay, I've been wearing this mask because my state told me that was loving. It was appropriate. It was for my safety and the safety of those around me. And now that I look at the evidence, I see that that has always been a lie. You know, I keep using the example that face mask is like trying to stop mosquitoes with a chain link fence because the proportions are the same. Thing that I found so fascinating recently was the one little I need to, but anyway, where Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, was giving a talk in some hospital or whatever, and he's wearing his mask and he's talking about it, and he has that kind of punctuated talking. So every once in a while, he has that breath, strong breath coming out, and he's wearing the mask, and he has the sloppy hair, so it shoots out, the breath shoots out the top of the mask, and you see the hair fluff. You think that's stopping a virus? If you do, you are just plain stupid, or you're a moron, to use the biblical term. You're a fool. And I won't be able to convince you otherwise, will I? Because you won't look at the evidence. You will simply say, well, everybody else does it. And so you'll show up at church on Sunday morning because everybody else does it. You'll sing a song and you'll listen to a sermon and maybe you'll go to a Sunday school and whatnot. Where do you find any of that in the Bible? You know, you see at the Last Supper, after they sang a hymn, they went. That was not a command. That was just simply what they did. So, is it wrong to sing? Not at all. Is it wrong to gather in a group and sing? Not at all. Is there any command to gather in an institution regularly and sing? No, there is not. There is not. Is there any command for a sermon? Again, the word sermon does not appear in the Bible. Ever. The words, the idea of Sermon on the Mount is a title given to a passage, the Matthew 5 through 7. But the word sermon does not appear. And I do think, because it's a fascinating question, because if you look at, I think it's Matthew 5, the crowd was there, and then he went off with his disciples. And at the end, Matthew 7, he then dismissed the crowd. So that conversation that happened there, was it to the crowd or just to his disciples? I don't think it's clear in the text. I could be wrong. Maybe somebody could point out something where there's something specific that he's talking to the crowd. But it appears to be he was talking to his disciples, which again I think would be consistent with, for example, the John 6. Because what you see in John 6 is you had the crowds that came from the food. But then when he said, my body is your food and those kind of things. You need to be obedient to me kind of thing. Crowd said, thanks, food's gone, we're out of here. But his disciples, he asked his disciples, are you going to leave too? And they said, where else will we go? He is the one place, the one person to follow. That's it. There is no one else. If you're his disciple, you follow him, not the crowds. I think this is rather important. There is no command whatsoever to gather in an institution. Again, the Hebrews 10:25, I think it is. Do not forsake the gathering together, the episynagoge. You know, I point that out because if you're going to use that as an argument, why don't you use the terms synagogue for your place of assembly, just as you see in James 2:2, which is clearly a gathering of Christians. Why don't you use the word synagogue? Why not? Because again, synagogue is used, as is ecclesia in the Old Testament. You know, including Genesis 1, where he gathered the waters together. When the waters were gathered together, it was a synagogue. Which, again, I find that humorous. You know, he didn't gather the waters together to form a Jewish organization. I'm sorry, no. But anyway, I find that humorous. But so my concern is the Kaiser Kurios of roughly 2,000 years ago is happening still today. Are you willing to say, no, my Lord is not the state, my Lord is Jesus Christ, and pay the price? Whether it is job, position in the community, in an institution, family, or your life. One of the things that I was going to move on, but one of the things that was discussed I don't have it up here. It was the idea if you really wanted to do this well, you'd have a really fancy outline and those kind of things, but obviously I'm not doing any of that, am I? We read the passage in Matthew. Was it Matthew? I'll skip it. But the idea of, you know, your priority is Christ over your own family. Oh, because I had a wonderful dialogue with a different friend it's Matthew 23, so I had it right. I'm really making a mess here, aren't I? The statement was made. I'm guessing Jesus was being hyperbolic when he said, "We are to call no man father or to hate our family." And my response, I'll just read my response. Considering Matthew 23:8-10 and the context, we have a biological fathers who have done and do the role of father, and we have the Father in heaven who is a very real sense begot us. However, what Jesus refers to in attributing the title to others, such as the obvious example of the Roman Catholic Church. So in other words, a lot of people get really hyper about the idea of calling the Roman Catholic priest father because of this call no one father. But we do have the role of father. And I think the issue there is... Joseph was called Jesus' father. He was called his father, but he wasn't really his father. But he served that role. And in a real sense, we serve that role biologically with our own kids. The males do, and obviously the females serve the role of mother. But it is a role that we do. But if I take on a title and saying I'm the father of this community or whatever, then I've gone too far. And I really wonder if that is point. But then, on the Luke 14:26, besides your family, we're to hate our own life. But considering in Ephesians 5:29, for no one ever hated his own flesh, we by nature love or nurture our own flesh. And it seems the Luke passage is so relative value. While we love ourselves, our love for the Lord is hate in comparison. Because this is an issue that is... and so this, you know, I do have the verse now. I was looking at Matthew, it's Luke. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And, you know, it's interesting because we did some study on that, and boy, I'm getting long again, and I wasn't planning on doing that. But his own life, which is really talking about your breath. So it is your physical, I am alive. You know, we are alive until our last breath. I mean, that's why the term is there. That's why Jesus was considered dead when he breathed his last breath. I mean, that's, you know, he breathed his last, and that relationship between breath and life, because it's also the relationship with the idea of breath or pneuma, which is the spirit, because, you know, you can't grab a breath. I mean, just, you know, and it's the analogy of the, you can't grab the spirit. But, you know, in the same way, it's the Ephesians passage, for no one has hated his own flesh. Not life, but flesh. At that point, you're talking about your physical flesh, your body, you know, which you're made of. So we take care of our body, our physical body, but it's different than our life. So we understand no one ever hated his own flesh, but... so we don't, you know, it's not a one-to-one comparison between that and the Luke passage, where we are to call yes, even our his own life. So I would suggest one of the points there is that, you know, our value of our own life, our family, father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, and our own life is secondary. Even though we understand, we nurture our flesh, but our life is secondary because we're followers of Christ, because he's our creator. And if he's our priority, then, it's also in Luke, the idea, I think that's, the unworthy servant's idea. Anyway, I won't go on forever. These dialogues are important, and I don't know how clear I'm being, but okay. The reason I didn't call yesterday is because I was tired and other things happened. And that's maybe the most important. Because, you know, I celebrated this morning with my Jummy Jacks. Raw, raw. I did some more study on, you know, especially Daniel Hale in the SAMHS facility being tortured. Yes, he's on my mind. He's on my mind and in my constant prayers. Because he's a young guy in his 30s being tortured by my government. And I am concerned about the coldness of the institutional church. But then again, the other thing that happened, and it's actually several things over the past couple weeks. I saw the grace of the Lord in fantastic ways. Absolutely fantastic ways, including yesterday in several ways. One of the things that has become so very clear to me is the need to encourage Oh, one of my favorite words. Absolutely one of my favorite words. You see it one time in Scripture. Romans 1:12. Well, starting 11. For I long to see you, that I may impart to you some spiritual gift to strengthen you, that is, that we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine. The LSV is, that is, that I may be comforted together among you through faith in one another, both yours and mine. And I find it fascinating. The LSV, that I may be comforted together. NASB, that I may be encouraged together. ESV, that we may be mutually encouraged. I didn't check King James. That I may be comforted together with you. So the question is, I or we, and so forth. Because as I look into it, the I and we doesn't exist in the Greek. So it's implied to make the English right. But I think it's unclear whether it's I or we. But the important thing is comforted together or mutually encouraged. One of my favorite words, sum parakaleo. Together, call near. Sum parakaleo, sum, together, para, near, kaleo, to call, as in ecclesia, to call out. Or some translate it as church. But anyway, sum parakaleo, together, both you and I, together, we call each other near. I did, again, part of one of my videos last year, I focused on that. The intensity, the joy of that word, just that word, because the idea, hey, you, come close to me. And I want to live that out, because when somebody calls me close, I need to call them close. We do it together. We do it mutually. That is such a big deal. That is really, really a big deal. And in the last couple days, I saw that a bunch. I have found that when I speak clearly to somebody, such as I'm doing now, striving to do, maybe I've mumbled a bit, but I'm finding that when I interact with people on the street, when I strive to proclaim Christ in video form, whether it's in my voicemails, whether it's some of the other videos I've done, whether some of the articles are written and so forth, on occasion, I get a response. And sometimes it's fantastic. And it makes it all worthwhile. It really does make it worthwhile. Plus, I will contend it's obedience to Christ. So, we are called to encourage. More often than not, it's just the parakaleo, to call near, to encourage. The one time is a soon parakaleo, to together call near. I want to do it whether there is the together or not, because I think we're commanded to do it anyway, to encourage. I've seen and I've had some impact of that come back to me in the last couple weeks. That drives me all the more as we start a new year to do it all the more, to encourage others to follow the Lord. So when somebody says, say the Kaiser Kurios, Jesus is Lord, not the state. Check into Proverbs 1984. Jesus is Lord, not the state. Donning the mask is saying the state is Lord, not reason. Going to the institution. Again, when you go to an institution, love the people at the institution. Don't love the institution. And if they ask you for a tithe, they're not Levites. They're thieves. there is no call to gather an institution. And one of the ways you can tell that is they won't take on a challenge to that, will they? I am delighted to say that I started the year instead of with 512 jumping jacks, 1,024. Yay! It means nothing. I won't stand closer to the Lord because of it. But it's a personal goal, like the personal goal that somebody else may have, that few people have and few people set and few people strive for. It is a gift to me. The Lord has given me. And I hope that, especially to my kids, the Lord will grant you a gift. I need to strive for this, whatever this is. Assuming, obviously, it's within obedience to Christ. Secondly, pray for Daniel Hell. For whatever reason, he, beyond all others, is really in my heart. And I think maybe because, beyond all the others that have been involved in things like this, I really wonder if he's my brother. I really, really wonder if that's true. You know, we're supposed to pray for all people, especially those, especially the brothers. And I really wonder if he is. I don't know. I don't know enough about him. And make your allegiance to the Lord, not the state. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. That's what Proverbs 1984 was based on, but Proverbs 1984 is a rather twist on that. Trust in the Lord. Follow him. Pay any price. Love him well. And of course, remember, my lady, I love you.